particle falling to Earth, and it's causing bafflement because it's coming from an apparently empty region of space. And if it's causing bafflement for astronomers, can you imagine what it's causing to me? Which is why we have asked David Moore from Astronomy Ireland to join us on the telephone this evening. David, good evening to you.
Good evening.
I was saying to you off air that even though I read about this several times over the course of the day, I'm still baffled to the power of 100. Maybe you'll debaffle me.
Well, we'll certainly try. It's about subatomic physics more than, say, pure astronomy, but it will help us explain the universe. It will fall a little bit under the astrophysics umbrella. And of course, we're all interested in what we're made of. You and I are made of these subatomic physics. There's no getting away from that. These tiny particles that somehow were created by the universe and the Big Bang are what we and everything is made of. So understanding them might not be that important to everyday life, but it certainly gives us an understanding of where we came from. And we can actually use them in applications. Little electrons, for instance, buzzing around semiconductors is what makes all of our smartphones and electronics work, after all.
The particle, it's one of the highest energy cosmic rays ever detected. But what exactly does that mean to the uninitiated?
Well, so matter, like planets, stars, they're made of atoms, and you know, which are conglomerations of lots of subatomic particles. People may remember learning in school. So in the nucleus of an atom, we've got protons and neutrons, and around those we've got electrons, and that makes your atom. And they're the building blocks of all normal matter in the universe. But it turns out there's more subatomic particles than that. And also these atoms, very high temperatures, say in a giant explosion, can get ripped apart. And the individual electrons get flung out into space. And so do the protons and even the nucleus of a whole atom. And so astronomers have been looking for these around the universe because they'll tell us something about explosions that are happening a long way away. And they've been finding very high-energy ones. So, hey, remember that we spent $10 billion, roughly 10 billion euros, on the Large Hadron Collider on the French-Swiss border to make particles go as fast as they possibly can and then slam into each other to see what happens. It's a bit like trying to figure out how a car works by crashing two of them at high speed, picking up the bits and saying, oh, there's the alternator, there's the radiator, there's the tires, figuring out what it was made of. That's more or less what they're doing with the $10 billion. But even that thing, the best the human race can produce to date, can't produce particles as big as this one or as energetic as this one. Something has sped these particles up to millions of times faster than the LHC can do. So that's great because we can now use particles in nature to try and study effects that we just can't produce ourselves. And the problem is, they've been looking for particles like this, and they found some extremely energetic ones, millions of times greater than ones we can make with all our technology. And the question is, where did they come from? And giant particles like this are charged, and the problem is magnetic fields out in space can change their path, but these things are so heavy, moving so fast, that the magnetic fields just have no effect on them effectively. So wherever they come from, that's where the source should be. And we thought that the sources of a lot of these really high-energy particles were supernova, when a giant star, much bigger than the Sun, explodes at the end of its life, because they're the biggest explosions we know of in the universe since the Big Bang. And it turns out there's nothing in the direction that this particle came from. There's no black holes. There's not even any stars. It seems to be a void in space. So astronomers are really scratching their head that these big record-breaking particles they found don't seem to have a source. We were hoping to find out something interesting, and we've actually found out that it's a huge puzzle, and that's what's confusing them about this object.
Professor John Matthews of Utah University and has been writing about this, and he said, wrote, you trace its trajectory to its source, and there's nothing high energy enough to have produced it. That's the mystery of this. And he concludes, what the heck is going on? So he has no idea. So is it then speculation?
Yeah, I mean, if there was a very active galaxy, say, in that direction, we know in the middle of really active galaxies there are giant black holes. There's one in our galaxy. It's only 5 million times the mass of the Sun. but there's ones much bigger than that in other active galaxies. And if it came from that direction, we'd say, aha, there's things going on there that can keep giving this thing energy, speeding up, and then fling it out of the galaxy for it to arrive at us millions of years later. But there isn't a galaxy there. There isn't a black hole there. It seems actually to be a particularly empty piece of space where this object appears to have come from. So there's nothing to see to try and figure out what made this thing go so fast. And to give you an idea, atoms that we're made of, get about 10 million of them side by side across a millimeter. So have a look at your ruler and look at the 1 millimeter divisions. And you get 10 million of them side by side across that. Their atoms are extremely tiny. This thing will be smaller than that. And yet it's got so much energy, a single particle, that it's got the equivalent energy of dropping a brick from your waist onto your toe. Now that would hurt. And a brick, of course, is a monstrously big object compared to an atom. So for one atom or a smaller atom thing to hit the Earth with that kind of force is ridiculous. And you would expect something really exotic was firing those things our way, and there's nothing there. So like he says, you're scratching your head trying to figure out what is going on, and nobody had any idea.
Just from what I was reading earlier as well by this professor, a potential candidate, and again he admits that this is speculation, for this level of energy would be a supermassive black hole at the heart of another galaxy.
And that's what I was saying, very active galaxies would do that. Now, what can happen with very active galaxies is that when a star is ripped up and gobbled up by the giant black hole, it goes berserk. It's a feeding frenzy. Vast amounts of radiation, everything else, come flying out of the galaxy. And we see these. They're called quasars. And the idea is our galaxy's black hole at the moment is very quiet. It's not gobbling anything up at the moment. And it could be that when a black hole at the center of a galaxy is feeding, it's very, very bright. And then when it gobbles that star or a few stars, whatever it is, up, it goes quiet for a while. And maybe that's what's happened. There really is a very active galaxy in this void of space where there seems to be nothing, but it's now quiet. And this thing was made back at a time when it was actually gobbling something up. That could be one explanation, but it's going to be very difficult to prove that because it might not be thousands or millions of years before the galaxy starts feeding its black hole again. So we just don't know. And that's probably about the only realistic theory that we can have. Other theories are very interesting. Maybe there's some kind of exotic physics going on that we don't understand. One thing I saw was these proposed cosmic strings that might explain how all particles come into existence. And if two of them were to collide, this might be able to produce enough energy to speed this thing up to the kind of speeds we're seeing. That would be very interesting, because then we actually start to have a tool to research cosmic strings, which are purely hypothetical at the moment. So it's an interesting area, but not something that can be immediately explained.
And just finally, David, when scientists discover something like this, do they then spend the rest of their lives trying to explain it? Because, as Professor Matthews says, and as you've said, there's no explanation for it, but there has to be. We just don't know what it is yet.
Yeah, well, what happens is this particular discovery was published in a scientific journal, so lots of scientists who weren't working directly in this area will be thinking about it. And if there's theoreticians that are working on these cosmic strings, they think, oh, that might be my cosmic string theory might explain that. They may have an actual reference point to refine their theories. So you get lots of other people coming in to the area with potential theories, and then you go looking for other evidence to see, well, if it is that, what else would happen? And if we look for the other thing that might happen, that sort of proves that we're on the right track. And that's how science progresses. So they've shared this with the whole scientific community. Maybe somebody will come up with a good idea, and that's how we further our knowledge. So the people who work in this particular area, so building the equipment to find these things, they'll keep going on building more and more sensitive detectors to find more and more of these kind of objects. And that later on can be the fuel that proves which of hopefully several theories come out of all this is correct. That's how we get to things like the Big Bang. You know, the Big Bang predicted there should be a flash of radiation after the Big Bang happened, about 400,000 years later. We found that in the 1990s. They won the Nobel Prize for doing that. And that sort of proved the Big Bang was the real theory of how the universe came into existence. And that's how science goes forwards to explain our place in the universe. So it's fascinating to watch. The only problem, I suppose, from a human perspective is this kind of thing takes years or decades, and there's never any immediate instant answer.
Before we finish, what's happening with Astronomy Ireland at the moment?
Well, we're gearing up at the moment for two big events in Christmas. One is our Christmas lecture, The Science of Santa Claus. So that should be fun. A bit of a tongue-in-cheek look at what laws of physics does he violate. So you learn a bit of astronomy on it while you're having a bit of fun thinking about Santa Claus. And then, of course, the big event to watch is that the best shooting star meteor shower of the year is happening on the 13th and 14th of December, a couple of days after our Christmas lecture. So that week before Christmas is going to be very busy for astronomers. The moon's out of the way, so people are going to get the very best view of it. And we have two nights to see it. So we're going to be asking the whole country to count them. There'll be at least 20 times more meteors than normal. And also, a lot of them are fireballs from this particular source. So it's the best of the year. So all we can do is hope for clear skies. In the meantime, we've got the International Space Station flying over every night this week. Actually, 6:05 is the time tonight. If people want to set an alarm on their clock, set it a couple of minutes before, go outside and watch the seven astronauts blazing over Ireland. And you see them every night till December 5th. And there's loads more things happening. Jupiter's near the moon. So is Saturn. A lovely full moon up last night. It was full officially, the Beaver Moon this time. And in the new year, we've got at least two eclipses visible from Ireland, two more giant meteor showers. There are a couple of bright comets coming unusually, and things to see with the planets galore. So it's always exciting. Anybody who wants to know more, do join Astronomy Ireland. It only costs €1 a week. Astronomy.ie is the website for all those events, and to join the club and get the magazine.
Very good, David. We leave it there. As always, many thanks indeed for joining us on the programme this evening.
My pleasure.
You know, he's one of those people who is so enthusiastic about his craft. It's absolutely wonderful to see and hear. I have to say, I'm fascinated by this, but I'm no wiser, if you know what I mean. That's not being disrespectful. I just find it very difficult to get my head around any of this, but it's still fascinating.
The Grapevine.